Hi, and welcome to the Conservation in HD podcast series. Today we'll be exploring facilitating local stakeholder participation in landscape scale conservation. I'm Brad Milley, and I'm a social scientist in the Human Dimensions branch of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service at the Natural Resource Program Center in Fort Collins, Colorado. This podcast is part of our effort to put tools and resources in the hands of practitioners and is a collaborative effort with the National Conservation Training Center. Here with me today is Catherine Doyle Kappenman, who is a PhD candidate at Cornell University. Thank you for coming out today, Catherine.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you so much, Brad.
So, Catherine, we're talking about facilitating local stakeholder participation in landscape scale conservation. Can you tell our listeners a little bit what you mean about landscape scale conservation?
Sure, absolutely. So landscape conservation is basically a process of collectively developing conservation goals for broad areas. These are areas that are maybe entire ecosystems, or they may be mountain ranges, or they may be watersheds. Basically, landscape is a very, very malleable term. A lot of people define it in different ways. But basically, it's areas and resources that cross jurisdictional boundaries, whether those be state boundaries, national boundaries, even county boundaries. So landscape conservation is necessary because modern environmental challenges are transboundary. They cross socio-political boundaries that we see every day. So, for example, pollution, non-point source pollution, invasive species, habitat fragmentation and loss. Those are all very broad geographic issues that we as a modern society face. And so the only way to really address them is to work collectively with multiple sectors, multiple landowners and different interest groups. And we sort of, as a conservation community, need to be moving away from focusing on formally protected areas as the primary areas that we conserve resources. Because as valuable as parks and preserves and refuges are, the resources that reside in those specific areas don't really notice the socio-political boundaries and borders that we put around them. And they cross those boundaries and those borders all the time. So as a conservation community, we're increasingly adopting a collaborative, broad-scale approach to conservation planning and implementation.
Great. Thank you. Yeah, that sounds a lot like the work that we do in the Human Dimensions branch, where we cross socio-political boundaries. And you're talking about those existing in both an ecological and a socio-political scale.
Absolutely.
So, yeah. So tell me a little bit about why it's important to facilitate local stakeholder participation in this planning process.
Absolutely. So local stakeholders, just to define the term first, basically these are stakeholders that operate at the ground level where resource management and use happen. They have active interests in how resources, both cultural and natural, are managed and used. And they also have a very strong power because they're the ones that are either supporting or impeding implementation of pro-conservation activities, such as management activities or species conservation efforts. There's a lot of reasons that engaging local stakeholders in large landscape planning and conservation is important. First of all, just to give you an interesting statistic, it's been estimated that about 40% of endangered species in the United States reside on private lands. And so as much work as we do in the Fish and Wildlife, or you guys do in the Fish and Wildlife, and as much work as the Park Service does, they can only manage so much. They can only conserve so many species and so much habitat because they have limits to how much they can administer. So engaging local stakeholders is really important from the perspective of actually getting the conservation doers, the people that are doing the management on the ground, involved in the conservation planning process. Engaging these stakeholders can help increase the good governance that we practice. They can help include the people that are going to be impacted and who impact management and conservation, be involved in the planning process. Involving local stakeholders in conservation planning across large landscapes can help ensure that conservation goals are more feasible and that conservation planning products that come out of these planning efforts, whether those are environmental assessments, species habitat models, management strategies, help ensure that there's a higher likelihood that those products will be adopted. Because people who are involved in planning processes have a higher likelihood of having ownership over whatever the process is and the outcome of the process. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, engaging local stakeholders can really help address an issue that we as a conservation community face of issues of scale. So landscape conservation planning happens across broad landscapes and vast mosaics of land use and ownership. But the thing is, you can't always have all of those administrators of all those lands in the room together. So finding ways to engage the diversity of stakeholders at the local level somehow through representatives or through gathering social data having them involved in the planning process really helps integrate the different scales at which conservation planning and management implementation actually occur. Mm-hmm.
This is great, Catherine. It's really clear that you're very excited about this topic and really knowledgeable, I can tell. So tell me about the professional reasons, but more importantly, maybe some of the personal reasons why you decided to go into this this field of research and pursue this project in the first place.
Yeah, thank you so much. That's a good question. So to step back, you know, I have a background in biology, and I became a social scientist because I realized that one of the best ways to conserve and help the conservation of our national resources is really dealing with the people. You know, there's limited funding available for conservation, and that money goes to research, planning, or implementation. And my interest in the local stakeholder participation in landscape conservation really has to do with increasing the effectiveness and the efficiency of landscape planning processes. Because one of the big challenges that's been observed is that if the people who are the end users of planning products, these are the local stakeholders that are actually using the planning products to inform their management planning and their implementation, if they're not involved in the planning process, it could be that the conservation goals that they end up with are not feasible, and the planning products that are developed are not useful or usable. And so I'm really interested in ensuring that we make landscape planning processes as efficient and as effective as possible so that we can avoid what's known as a planning implementation gap. That's where a bunch of folks come together and they participate in planning processes and they produce planning products, but those planning products are never used to inform local management practices. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And that's a terrible shame because it ends up being a waste of money. It ends up being a waste of time. And in some cases, it can really degrade those conservation partners' willingness to participate in collaborative decision-making in the future. Because the reason that we come together and collaborate is because we can't achieve our goals unilaterally. And so if at the end of a planning process, we can't achieve our goals, that means that the entire reason for coming together is sort of negated. And so I'm really interested in, since landscape conservation and transboundary collaborative conservation are increasingly being adopted, I'm really interested in helping promote the likelihood that those planning processes result in pro-conservation management actions.
Sure. So that's your passion.
That's my passion.
That's your passion. That's fantastic. So when you talk about landscape scale conservation, I'm imagining very environmentally and socially and geographically diverse areas. You know, I have these great pictures in my head of the different landscapes you worked in. But can you tell me about those and tell me where they were, but also why you chose them to be part of this research project?
Absolutely. So I started out by doing a literature review to really understand what the literature could tell us about how local stakeholders and social data were being used in large landscape initiatives and the planning processes of those initiatives. I then went on to do scoping interviews with the coordinators of 33 large landscape initiatives throughout the United States to kind of better understand how those initiatives worked and how they were integrating local stakeholders and social data to really sort of set the picture for myself, to really understand basically from a broad variety of perspectives how these stakeholders were being engaged and how social data was being used, if it was. I then really wanted to get high resolution data so I can really kind of delve into a specific case study to understand how a particular type of landscape conservation group was using local stakeholders and engaging with local stakeholders and social data. And so for that purpose, I chose three landscape conservation design efforts administered by landscape conservation cooperatives. And landscape conservation design is an effort to collectively determine conservation goals for the future conditions of large landscapes. And I wanted to choose landscape conservation design efforts that kind of had variability across a couple of variables, including mechanisms that were used to engage local stakeholders and stages at which those stakeholders were engaged and the role the stakeholders played in the decision processes and whether and how social data was used and the governance structure of the initiatives. So that took a bit of upfront research and a bunch mm-hmm. of conversations. And ultimately, I decided on three case studies. One was in the Connect the Connecticut, which is the Connecticut River Watershed Landscape Conservation Design, as it was formerly called. And that is throughout the entirety of the Connecticut River watershed, all the way from Vermont and New Hampshire down to Massachusetts and Connecticut. The next case study I chose was the landscape conservation design in the Great Lakes coastal wetlands. And that was primarily in the state of Michigan, but also in northwestern Ohio. And the final case study I chose to look at was in the Green River Basin landscape conservation design, and that was in Utah, Colorado, and Wyoming. And those are, you know, as you can tell just by a description of the states that they were in, they're very distinct areas with different environmental issues that they faced. And they all conducted, because landscape conservation cooperatives are independent partnerships, they all conducted their landscape conservation designs in unique ways. But it provided me some really fabulous insight into basically how they conducted the landscape conservation design. And what I did was I both interviewed the coordinators of the landscape conservation designs, the a number of the development team members who were responsible for producing those planning products throughout the planning process, as well as the intended end users of the landscape conservation design planning products. So I got a really rounded insight, which was really, really valuable for my research.
Yeah, absolutely. I have a really special place in my heart for the Connecticut River watershed in western Massachusetts, having gone to UMass Amherst.
Nice.
Beautiful part of the country.
Absolutely.
And listening to you, I can't help but be a little jealous about, you know, you working in these three different areas, not only, you know, how distinct they are, but also how distinct the people must have been that you got a chance to talk to.
Yeah.
So I know you learned a ton during the course of your research. We've talked at length about some of the lessons you've learned, but can you tell us, what were some of the most surprising lessons learned from your research? What were some of the most interesting ones that you want to share with us today?
Absolutely. So, first of all, you know, when you read the literature, a lot of the time what you come across is that local stakeholders aren't going to want to be involved in large landscape planning because their focus and their locus of control, what they can actually influence, is relatively local compared to the broad landscapes that landscape scale conservation focuses on. What I found, which was contrary to what was in the literature, was that these local stakeholders really did want to be involved. I primarily spoke with end users of planning products, both potential and current, and they really wanted to be involved. They would actually have been very offended. And in some cases, you know, that was a challenge that we saw, that they were unhappy because they didn't feel like they were engaged early enough.
Didn't want to be left out of the process.
They did not want to be left out of the process. So even if they didn't ultimately want to participate, they really wanted the opportunity to. Mm-hmm. They want to be asked. You know, they wanted to be asked to the dance, even if they didn't want to go to the dance. But one of the things that I found was also really interesting was that sometimes they weren't particularly interested in focusing on the entire landscape, because the landscape didn't necessarily, that was chosen for ecological reasons, didn't have social meaning and value to these end users, these local stakeholders. And so what I found was the most likely way that you can get local stakeholders to want to participate in planning is to have the focal landscape or the focal resources have meaning and value to mm-hmm. those local stakeholders. There's this concept in sociology called sense of place. And sense of place is the emotional or affective, identity-based, and functional dependencies that we have on resources and places. So thinking about those local stakeholders' sense of place when it comes to determining the landscape boundaries or the sub-regions at which we engage local stakeholders can be really important. And that was a really interesting finding. Relationship and trust building ended up being the primary ingredients to successful landscape conservation planning and promoting the likelihood that planning products were going to be adopted into local management planning and implementation. And so it really became clear that even though funding and managers, you know, managers, bosses, or whoever it might be that might be putting pressure on the participants of planning processes, you know, those pressures are real. But making sure that you don't artificially accelerate the pace of planning can be really important, because that can reduce the likelihood that trust building and relationship building happens.
So you really need to slow down, do it right from the beginning. Get the right people at the table to make sure that everything is done correctly.
Absolutely. Beyond that, you know, a lot of people are, you know, are sort of still left wondering, well, what local stakeholders should we engage? There's so many potential stakeholders, both local stakeholders and extra local stakeholders, you know, people from outside the boundary.
Extra-local, people from outside the boundary. That's the first time I've heard that.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, but there's just lots of questions about who to engage. And what I found in my research was that some of the really instrumental people to engage at the local level are really these end users, the people that you're really making the planning products for. And engaging them is really instrumental to ensuring that the planning products are useful and usable. And ultimately, a really interesting thing that I heard from numerous interviewees was that both engaging supporters of the landscape conservation effort and potential detractors, people that aren't as supportive, is really important. Not only because it really ensures that the planning process is inclusive and it doesn't exclude people just because they don't agree, but it also increases the likelihood that the planning participants are able to understand challenges out there and able to address those challenges that might ultimately really tank a planning process in its success of moving from planning to implementation.
Sure. So bringing that diversity of opinions, thoughts, all that sort of thing to the table in the beginning so that everybody's on the same page and knows where we're all coming from.
Absolutely. And sometimes there's issues of distrust, you know, that occur, and they may be distrust of planning efforts. They may be distrust of agencies. And just inviting those people to come sit at the table with you and to learn that you're not trying to take their land away, you're not trying to do anything negative, you're really just trying to understand their interests, needs, and values, and use their knowledge to successfully inform ground-truthed planning products can really be helpful to the planning process.
Great. So, Catherine, you've done a lot of work on this topic. You've visited different geographies, you've done literature reviews, you've talked to all sorts of people. What do you want the impact of this research to be?
So the primary impact that I'm really interested in is reducing the incidence of planning implementation gaps. Really going back to the idea of increasing efficiency and effectiveness, I really want to help the conservation community plan effectively so that the money spent and the effort spent and the resources spent on planning lead to conservation outcomes. That's the primary outcome that I'm really hoping to achieve. Through the work that I've done and the writing that I've done, I'm also hoping to inform process development, organizational administration, and even in some cases, regulatory decision-making. One of the really exciting outcomes of this work that I would love to tell you more about is that we produced a practitioner's guide, which is a really awesome and useful resource, at least I hope it's a useful resource, to conservation practitioners who are involved in landscape planning or who might become involved in landscape planning.
So what's in the guide? How might people go about using it?
Absolutely. So the guide that we've produced, that Cornell University's Human Dimensions Research Unit has produced, is intended for conservation partners and process leaders who, as I mentioned, are involved in landscape planning or are involved in resource management associated with resources that do span boundaries, and so people who might become involved in landscape planning processes. So the guide has a number of chapters, and it focuses on a range of things. It starts out by basically laying the scene for why local stakeholder participation is important. I should mention that one of the primary goals of this guide is actually to provide best practices for engaging local stakeholders and integrating human dimensions considerations and social data into landscape planning processes. And so it starts out by talking about why local stakeholder engagement and the integration of social data is important in landscape conservation planning.
Sort of some of the things we've been covering today.
Exactly. Yeah. It then goes into, based on my interviews with 50 end users or potential end users of landscape planning products, it goes into understanding what their preferences are for participating in these planning efforts. It also goes into kind of what the challenges to good governance are when there aren't sufficient or effective opportunities for local stakeholders to engage. You know, it can degrade inclusiveness. It can degrade willingness to adopt planning products. It goes into just some insights into what the challenges are that can come about if these local stakeholders aren't involved. And then it's got a big section on best practices for engaging local stakeholders and integrating social data into landscape planning. And in order to convey that, I've broken down the landscape planning process into 6 general stages. So those are not necessarily stages that every single landscape initiative will produce, but they're generally pretty insightful about kind of how the process works and best practices at each of those stages. And then ultimately, we provide insight into where conservation partners and practitioners can find existing social data that they might use to inform their landscape planning. And we also have 25 pages of vetted questions that conservation partners and practitioners may ask potential stakeholders and local stakeholders to gather insights into their interests, their needs, their knowledge, their preferences. All really good insight for informing landscape conservation planning in such a way that the planning products will ultimately be useful and usable to those end users.
What a super useful tool. And to have the bank of questions at the end that the practitioners on the ground can use, I think, is just value added to what looks to be a really valuable guide.
Oh, thank you. And it'll be available. It's just finished now, and it's basically going to the printing presses in a couple weeks. And it'll be available through either physical distribution of actual booklets, or it'll be online as a PDF in July of 2018.
Great. Thank you, Catherine. I really appreciate you being in the studio today. And if our listeners have any questions for you, what's the best way for them to get in touch with you?
Absolutely. You can contact me at my email address, ced97@cornell.edu.
Great, thank you. For those listening, I know that that gives you some insights into facilitating local stakeholder engagement and landscape scale conservation. We have several additional podcasts in the works, and all of our podcasts can be found on the NCTC podcast page, which you can find by Googling NCTC podcasts. You can also be notified of new podcasts by subscribing on iTunes. Just search for Human Dimensions in Conservation in the podcast iTunes store. When you scroll down, the podcast episodes will be available. If you have ideas for future podcast topics, please email the Human Dimensions branch at human_dimensions@fws.gov.